Welcome to the episode 5 of the Office Hours podcast. Today we have with us Mo, and we're going to have an interesting conversation today. So, welcome.
Hello, Vasily. How you doing?
Doing great. Thank you very much. It's been an exciting week for me. I have started doing on-call at my work, so I have to babysit the production environment, and it's kind of stressful, to be honest, not going to lie.
But you get to also have some time off after the call, right?
I think so. I actually have to figure out how that works. I believe if it falls on like holidays, then there's like some in lieu type deal, but I'm not 100% sure right now, so I'll get it sorted out.
It'd be nice to have some time off for yourself, because if you babysit production, it's a very serious vigilante service.
Well, it's not just me. There's like a big team involved. There's offshore people, and you know, I have the support of my teammates. But you know, it's like long hours. It starts early, and even though like the on-call hours are Toronto time, I'm Vancouver time, so it starts like extra early for me. But
how is that going? You know, like I remember how it felt with the Vancouver hours.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how are you coping with that now?
You know, it's gotten pretty good. I used to be like an owl type for pretty much my entire life. I would stay late. I would wake up late.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I could actually do it, whenever I haven't had a fixed schedule, I would like go to bed really, really late. Sometimes I'd go to bed, like I would see the sunrise and I was like, ooh, I guess it's time to go to bed. You know, nighttime, I find it's very productive because it's very quiet. It's quiet out on the street, so it's very, very quiet. You can kind of focus a little bit better. You don't get distracted by, you know, people texting you or phone calls or anything like that. So I did like a lot of good work at night back in the day. But, you know, it's like not very conducive for proper life within a society, because, you know, you wake up late in the evening and like, what are you going to do?
You see, I'm starting to feel like, because recently I've been doing a lot of study into time management and also energy management.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people talk more about like time management, but there is also the energy management, because you don't have the same amount of energy throughout the day, right?
Right.
But I find like late at night, you actually, maybe it's just me, but I find myself being more productive at this hour.
Mm-hmm.
As well. So I'm wondering, like, is this a thing for everyone else? Like, for example, I've spoken to some people who find like morning hours really more productive because they just woke up.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, if I go to sleep and then I wake up, the first 30 minutes, 1 hour, especially if I don't go to the gym immediately,
mm-hmm.
it feels like I may be uninterested in anything else. I just want to just sit and just probably just stare at the wall or something. So yeah, I'm wondering, like, how do you, which ones do you find more suitable, like even
right,
now with your
right.
changing schedule?
That's a good question. I think for a lot of people, especially these days, like everyone's sleep is just completely messed up. You know, we have artificial lighting,
mm-hmm.
that's messing with our circadian rhythms. People tend to stay glued to their phone late in the night. And, you know, I think we talked about it before, about like the phone usage a couple of episodes before. And
mm-hmm.
it's definitely a struggle. You know, they're very addictive. And you have this feeling, it's like, oh, I have to go to bed. I have to go to bed. And then you just like scroll and scroll and scroll.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, I put like all sorts of technical measures to prevent myself from doing that.
Okay.
But a couple of years ago, I also find that if I'm procrastinating, I get really creative at like figuring out ways on how to procrastinate better. Like, for instance, I put like a block list to filter out some websites like Reddit or whatever, you know, the ones that like suck you in and occupy all of your time. You just scroll and scroll and scroll. Mm-hmm. And so I put like a DNS based filter. So if I go to that website, it'll like redirect me to a page saying, hey, you know, you're not supposed to go there. And because I was browsing on my phone, I realized like, hey, if I turn off the Wi-Fi, now my DNS server is like not part of the conversation because, you know, I'm talking to my internet service provider through my phone and that blocking just basically stops working. And oh, because it only takes like one swipe and one tap in the phone interface to do that, it was like, oh, hey, quick bypass. Boom, I'm back on the grind, you know, scrolling like a maniac. And
you're literally
so
hacking yourself.
It is. You are hacking yourself to get to that dopamine. And I find that it's kind of, there's like interesting parallels where you're supposed to be doing something productive, right? Like, or you have some important deadline or have some sort mm-hmm. of task mm-hmm. and, you know, you wake up in the morning and, you know, you go to the kitchen to like make yourself a cup of coffee or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you see like these leftover dishes piling up in a sink. It's like, washing those dishes is a very, very good thing to do. So it's like, who cares about deadlines and important stuff? Like, I have all these dishes that they need to be done. And everybody knows that, like, you know, keeping dishes clean and keeping your kitchen pristine is a good thing. So you like trade off for a important task mm-hmm. at the expense mm-hmm. of something that is actually important. And like your brain is like trying to hack itself to like not do the right thing. Mm-hmm. So I think the adaptability there is crazy. And you kind of have to catch yourself doing these things and be like, okay, I have to stay on task and on focus. But in general, like throughout my life, I had these periods where my sleep would be very messed up. Like there was a period of time where I would like have like a difficulty falling asleep. I would just like lie in my bed and stare in the ceiling for hours and then finally like pass out. So that wasn't nice. These days, I don't have that problem, thankfully, at all. Like, as soon as my head hits the pillow, like, for most part, 30 seconds later, I'm out cold. Like, no problem there, which I'm really, really grateful for. And, yeah, I'm not entirely sure what to attribute it to. I have my ideas. But, yeah, overall, fixing sleep is, like, if you can do that, that's going to definitely be a benefit to you. I remember when we just started talking a couple of years back, you were saying mm-hmm. how, you know, you like grind out like 12 hours a day and you like sleep mm-hmm. like 6 hours and you like get up super early and like get back on the grind.
Whoa,
like,
five actually.
Or yeah. Five. Yeah. And I was like, Mo, hey, man, you got to calm down. You got to get like at least good 8 hours of sleep every night. Yeah. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to do that anymore. Yeah. And I believe that, you did adjust your schedule, so I guess you can tell us about your experience on that front.
To be honest, like at the time, I felt like there was a lot of things to do, and I felt like sleeping 8 hours felt like a luxury at the time. To be honest, like felt like something you do when you are really comfortable. But at the time, I didn't feel comfortable enough to actually get 8 hours, so I feared that I would take some hours to actually. So my schedule was really crazy. Like I would wake mm-hmm. up in the morning. I had some things I was studying for at the time. So between like, usually I get up around like 5:30 durable. Mm-hmm. So I'll do some exercise, 5:30. I'll do some exercise for like 30 minutes and yeah, prepare and then get on the table. And then I'm going to study till like work time, which I start usually at around like 8:45, 9. Mm-hmm. And I work till 5. At 5, I'm going to go outside a little bit and come back home at about there about after. Then I get some dinner. And between like 7:30-ish, I'm on the table again and back. I'm doing some work on like e-commerce or like any type of other things that I was doing at the time. And, or like just learning some new things, literally, or maybe something. Anyway, I'm gonna be on the table till probably around 12 or thereabout, and then I'm gonna, relax before, because I don't like to just get out of the table and go to the bed straight. So I'm just gonna walk around the house and just waste time, relax, calm down before 1 o'clock, and then I go to sleep at 1, and then I wake up at 5:30. So that was the cycle then. But what I noticed at the time was, like, I felt a lot. It wasn't like I didn't realize I was sleep deprived, until we talked about it, because
We
I
talked
was
about some
still
symptoms. You were saying, like, oh, I can't absorb new information. I read stuff and then next day I don't remember anything. And I was like, that sounds a lot like you're being sleep deprived, my friend.
I was struggling, like, at some point with concentrating, because I felt like a lot of struggled a little bit at that point. Like, although I was showing up for all my responsibilities at the time, but I didn't feel like I was 100% in my I didn't have the 100% of my energy, for each of, responsibilities at the time. So yeah, when we talked about it was a aha moment for me that, oh yeah, I need to get more sleep. So I improved that, and I think the next day after our conversation, I decided to, you know what, I'm gonna get 7 hours of sleep.
Such
And then
luxury.
such luxury, I tell you, it's luxury. Even yeah, to be honest, it's luxury. If you can get it, I think it's good. But if not, I think you have to do what you have to do. So yeah.
I kind of think about it slightly differently because, if you're a professional race car driver, is gasoline for your engine a luxury or a necessity?
It's a necessity because,
Right.
yeah,
So, and I feel like for having a healthy brain, sleep is a necessity, right? So
you see about that, I did some it works for me, really, being like getting enough sleep during after our conversation. But I also noticed, like, there was a time where 7 hours was good, so I decided, like, I was on vacation or something. Then I decided, like, to sleep more, and because enjoy, right? But then I noticed, like, if I sleep more than that, I feel lethargic when I wake up. I don't know if that's even the real word to use. Like, I'm just, like,
No.
slow. Like, I'm just really relaxed. So, like, I feel you have to understand your body and how
Definitely,
it's
definitely.
the type of amount of time you need to actually recharge. I don't think everybody really needs the 8 hours of sleep. I don't know. Maybe scientifically it's good, but
I think it's much deeper than that. I think that, well, first of all, artificial lighting makes our schedule very consistent. But, if you look out the window, the daylight time in the summer versus in the winter is like completely different. In the winter, you have very short daytime. So, you can afford to sleep longer because, in agrarian society, or like even pre-agrarian society, there isn't like really that much to do in the winter. You have short day, nothing grows, there's not really that much to tend to. You can sleep all you want. But then in the south, in the summer, sun rises at 4 a.m. and you can be bright and early tending to everything you need to tend to. And there's like all these different experiments with like polyphasic sleep, where you sleep for like several hours, then you wake up in the middle of the night, you sleep again. I had that a couple of times. I had a period of time in my life where I didn't have to use an alarm clock. So I would go to sleep and wake up sort of at whatever hours I wanted to. And after some weeks of that, I had maybe a short period of time where that would happen to me. Like, I would wake up in the middle of the night and kind of be like pretty alert, do stuff for a couple hours, and then go back to bed. But then I think I either found a job or something happened, something changed where I had to be beholden to an alarm clock once more. And yeah, that kind of disappeared.
And honestly, I think like the polyphasic sleep, when I was learning about that, it was then I realized that everybody would have to really find what works for them, you know. Like if you cannot really get like 8 hours, because life happens, it happens. Like you have to, honestly, like I get it, like investing in your brain health, it's a good investment, but at the
Yes.
same time, like if you really cannot afford it.
So it is, in a sense, it is a kind of a luxury. Like if you have priorities, you might have to sacrifice it temporarily. I guess I would generally just advise people from, I'm just gonna have 5 hours a night for my entire life. Like that's a bad strategy. Like if you have to run on afterburner for some time to finish something important, sure, but that, like don't build your life out of that. And I think on being feeling lethargic if you sleep for longer than usual, I was reading some stuff on, you know, how you have the phases of sleep, like deep sleep, REM sleep, that type
Yeah,
of stuff.
true.
And I heard that if you get woken up during the wrong phase of sleep,
That's
that's
true.
where you can get feeling lethargic, where you're like, oh my God, like I feel groggy. I feel like somebody smacked me over the head, right? But some sleep tracking software will detect what phase of the sleep you're in. And if you're like in REM, that's like the phase where you see all of the dreams. Like if you wake up during that phase, that's like the shallowest form of sleep ever. So you're like on the verge of waking up as it is. And if you wake up then you don't get that lethargical feeling. But if you're like in a super deep sleep, an alarm just like ripped you out of that, that's where you're gonna be like, I don't
Yeah,
feel too
true.
good.
True. Yeah, that's true, absolutely. I think I learned about that too, but I also know that after if you use an alarm, your body and you wake up at a certain time every day, your body prepares you to wake up at that time. After a period of time, so
Yeah,
like,
that's also true. A lot of
yeah,
times I would wake up like
absolutely,
5 minutes before my alarm clock goes off. So
yeah.
it's certainly true. I think that at first it was difficult having to wake up so early compared to like the rest of my life where I barely had to do that. But having that constraint of like, oh, you know, I have to attend that meeting at 7 a.m. every day. And that creates the structure, and structure creates the, you know, repeatability and the pattern. And you know, if you wake up at the same, like if you lead a very, very measured and boring life, like you wake up at the same time, you have your dinner at the same time, usually your body becomes very thankful and be like, okay, keep doing what you're doing. Like, don't surprise me.
Exactly.
We don't like surprises here.
It'd be nice, you know? It'd be
Yeah.
really nice
Yeah, it
if
would
you can have
certainly be
like a
nice.
very balanced time. Everything is on
Yeah.
time. That'd be really nice.
But you know, weekends tend to kind of throw a wrench into that because you can be very balanced Monday to Friday, and then Saturday it's like, well, you know, we want to see our friends, we want to stay late, we want to
Exactly.
have a couple of drinks, and
You
then
want to treat
Monday you
yourself.
gotta wake up early again. So, you know, if I was a complete hermit without any kind of semblance of social life, I'd be like, you know, weekend, schmeekend, I'll just stick to my schedule just to keep everything consistent. But you know, that's not happening anytime soon.
Yeah, it's not the easiest thing. But anyway, yeah, it's a really good lesson. But honestly, like finally, yeah, I just wanted to just also suggest like and on because me on days when I cannot really get all the sleep at once, maybe if I end up getting like probably 4 or 5 hours of sleep, I tend to take like naps during the day, like some 20 minutes nap, and that's where the polyphasic sleep thing comes in for me. So like I add it up in naps, and I find like you see like when you take 20 minutes of nap, you feel more rested. It's like you've said.
I had like
Wow.
varying degrees of success with naps. Sometimes you sleep for like half an hour and you wake up really groggy, sometimes not. So I like occasionally, if I've been working really hard or like doing really long days, I do have a need for like a quick nap in the middle of the day. 'Cause usually I wouldn't really have to do that, but sometimes I'm like, oh, you know, I can have a little nap. And then I put some podcast that sounds like a university lecture, 'cause that stuff knocks me right out, you know. It could be very interesting. It's just, you know.
What kind of lecture? Like mathematics or physics?
Oh no, not even necessarily the content itself. It's just like the level, volume, and the cadence, like that specific academic kind of delivery. Because back when I was in school, I remember one time, I was studying at BCIT, which is it's like a college, it's not a university. So there's like a lot of practical stuff, and it was a very short program. It was like 2 years mm-hmm. only, so we were working very hard. In fact, out of those 2 years, I barely remember anything in terms of what was happening with me. Like those 2 years just like blanked out of my conscience pretty much altogether. There's like a couple of moments here and there that I remember, but overall it's just gone. And so I remember we had an all-nighter working on a project, and you know, as you do, you go to a gas station, get a bunch of Red Bulls, and just like chug a bunch of Red Bulls in the morning to kind of stay awake for the next
mm-hmm,
day.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to a lecture and I'm like, aha, I'm clever. I'm going to sit at the front row in front of the professor. And if I do that, I'll be alert enough not to fall asleep. And I realized the futility of that idea when I heard the bell and everybody was like leaving the auditorium. And I had like a nice like 35 minutes of quality sleep. I just passed out right in front of him, and it was just, you know. So yeah, that was good.
I'm laughing because I can imagine you waking up to look for where's everybody, you know, like, and you're just by yourself in the auditorium. Right.
At least, you know, it was a big auditorium, so it was like probably 150 people. Because I remember seeing that video when it's like a smaller class of like 10 people and one of them falls asleep and professor goes like, and they all kind of get together and they start clapping, and this person wakes up and they kind of start clapping without understanding why they're clapping, but everybody around them is clapping. So, you know, you better be clapping. So yeah, nobody pranked me that day, and I'll take it.
I mean, it probably would have been better because now you just miss the entire thing. You just like, missed the lecture, but the sleep was, but you needed the sleep
I needed the sleep, exactly.
But yeah, but I can imagine that. I can really imagine that. I would have really like, if it might have hurt your feelings because then none of your friends woke you up, like nobody.
Yeah, as I said, like I don't really remember that much out of what was happening during those 2 years. I worked at a climbing gym. Part time, which was nice because I could climb for free. And we did group projects, we had exams, and because they had two intakes. There was like the September intake, which is the regular intake, and then they also had the January intake, which was like a delayed start. So if you started January, you basically didn't have the summer off. Like you had maybe like a week in August, and then next September, the second year would start right away, right? So it was very compressed. And yeah, those 2 years don't exist in my memory.
I can imagine. And it's been a long time too. So
yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah,
it's been like for 10, sure. It's okay. It's just a very funny story. I don't think I'm going to forget that quickly, but that's a very funny story. Mm-hmm. Anyway. I wanted to talk to you today a little bit about content management,
mm.
or how do you say that, producing content as a developer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right now.
Isn't that what we're doing right now?
Exactly. Right now, that's what we do. But
behold, you know, content.
Exactly. But I wanted to ask you about your opinion about certain types of content, because like I've seen people do content.
Mm-hmm.
I use Twitter, right? So like I see a lot of people come on Twitter to talk about different things, but I notice like right now there's a lot of buzzword going on around. It's like AI,
mm-hmm.
everything AI, 9 mm-hmm. AI that are better than ChatGPT. Here are the list of 10 AIs that is better than ChatGPT.
AI probably wrote that list. They didn't write probably, it themselves.
Probably, but the thing is, like, nowadays, with, like, all the tools that we have now, I don't know if you also notice, like, Copilot.
I'm familiar.
Copilot, Tab9, those guys. All these tools that we have nowadays, like, I'm Because then I started a blog, right, where I talk about like tech stuff and like different front end or stuff. But the question I have for you is like, what type of content do you think, in the blog space especially, would you be suggesting that would be useful for people these days, outside of 9 list of artificial intelligence tools that can help you speed up your performance or whatever they wrote these days?
The BuzzFeed model of 9 things you can't believe will do X, the laziest form of technical writing possible.
Honestly, it's crazy these days.
I don't know. On one hand, we were talking about how AI is just going to like destroy art because it will just flood the market with a bunch of inferior product. But at the same time, so if it becomes so good and you can't tell the difference, yeah, that's going to be difficult. But if it's like good enough and you can kind of still feel that something's off, maybe the content that's genuinely produced and written by an actual human being will be more, not popular, but like it'll be of a higher quality. And if you actually take the time to write it yourself, it will show, compared to like all of the tons of AI garbage that's like flooding everything right now.
On Twitter, yeah.
My own patterns, like I can't really tell much about producing AI, producing content, because I mean, this podcast is like my first foray into actually producing some content. And I'm picking the long form conversation partly because it is in some ways easier. You know, we're just talking, you bring up subjects, we talk, I have my reactions, and then I have some points or counterpoints to whatever you say. It's not like I sit down ahead of time and write everything down. I think you do, because, you know, you come up with all the questions and all the different subjects that you want to talk about. But still, it's not like we're doing it off a script. It's very natural, right? But when it comes to writing things, I think either you have to be deliberate or you just have to write regardless. You just have to take the effort, like just write every day. It doesn't matter, because, you know, the only way you get better at it is by doing more of it. I remember back in the day, I was like, maybe I should start a blog and write about tech, because like I do tech. But at the same time, there was like a couple of things which I've learned since to look past. You know, if you produce something and it's not immediately great, I would be like, ugh, this is so terrible. I don't want anyone to see this, right? Just destroy it, pretend it never existed. But if you're in that headspace, you'll never get better, because you will be dissuaded from writing because you think that everything you produce is garbage. And in the beginning, 99% of it probably will be too, right? Like, again, it's a skill that you have to learn and develop. And if you have the time for it, you should just write or produce content and get better eventually as a result. And I think we also talked about it in terms of, like, what is your goal? Is your goal in writing content, is the goal writing in itself? Is the goal delivering useful information to people? Is the goal to create like a public profile of yourself or like better visibility? Is the goal to show your skill so you're like more likely to get hired and all of these things? Or like, do you want to create like a YouTube channel that you will eventually monetize and make it your like secondary source of income? Because a lot of these things, like all of these different goals, I think they would have different approaches to how you do it. And for most part, I'm not familiar with most of them, in a sense. Like, I started a blog as well, but again, I wrote a couple of things and I got slammed at work, so I didn't really have time to write anything there. And it's one of those endeavors that like you have to keep doing kind of religiously. And actually there's one great video that I quite liked. I think I might have mentioned it before. It's by this game designer called Rami Ismail. It was like 11 things I learned while running an independent game development studio or something like that. And one of those things was, you know, it, like if you wait for inspiration to do something, it might never come. But if you're disciplined to just do something regardless every day, event like, well, A, you'll have something that you've done. You'll have some product that you've made. So that's already a plus, because if you're sitting there waiting for your muse, you're not writing anything for days at a time. And eventually, you know, your inspiration strikes and you write something, and there's like one few and far between. But if you're just diligent and disciplined and you just write every day, then by the end, you have a lot of content. That was actually one of the ideas behind this podcast. We've been talking for so long. We've talked about so many different topics, but none of it was captured, right? And so if it was captured right from the start, we'd have like library of, I don't know, a couple of hundred hours worth of content, right? And now we have to rectify it by kind of doing it. Not again, we do talk about different things, but there's like a lot of callbacks to the conversation we've already had.
Yeah, we recall,
Yeah, exactly. So, and I think if you talk to anyone who's doing that type of creative work, you know, some writers say, I would have to, like, why would old school writers go to the boonies with their typewriter completely disconnected from civilization and write? It's like to minimize on the amount of distractions they have in their life. Like some writers say, I would put myself in a room with bare walls and no window with like nothing to look at so I can, you know, introspect 100% and start writing as a means of alleviating my boredom effectively, because there's like, there's no other sensory input.
That's actually a good idea. Anyway.
Well, I haven't tried. I can't verify that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I imagine that, you know, just diligence and discipline and just doing it regardless of the quality of the output. A lot of times I was put off by the quality of the output and be like, oh, no, like that's not good enough. But it's never going to get good enough unless you do it 100 times or 1,000 times or 10,000 times. So you just go for it, wing it. If it's crap, who cares? It will not be crap eventually if you keep applying.
The reason why I was asking the question is because, so the nature of my blog is to write about development tools,
mm-hmm.
frameworks or stuff. But and then recently I checked and then I was surprised, like I was actually getting people's attention, like it was getting attention and views.
Oh, that's good.
And then I started thinking about it, like, oh God, this is pressure. Because that wasn't my idea when I started. My idea was just to challenge myself to learn something and talk about a topic that I've learned and what I've learned from it. So, anyway.
Meat is being, sorry to interrupt, but meat is being weird. Welcome back after this slight technical interruption, courtesy of Google. Thank you very much. All right. Yeah, we were talking about content production and, you know,
all of those things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to tell you the reason why I asked the question. And so what made me think about it, you know, when I saw like, the amount of people that are actually like viewing the blog, and I felt pressure a little bit, because then I felt like I need to put quality into what I'm doing there, because my initial idea was just to learn something and just talk about it. Mm-hmm. And it was more like a jota for me. And I felt like if anyone else wants to read my notes, like then there you have it, because I didn't even create a domain for the blog. Like it wasn't something that I was even looking for. I just left it on Ashnode like that. But then I checked the views and I was really surprised. Mm-hmm. So now I'm like, how do I give quality in this environment now? Like what would be considered quality? Because I just talk about the topics. I hope that's enough. But
right.
I don't.
Well,
go...
I mean, okay, you're getting views with the kind of quality that you have right now. So that means people already like what you write. And if you just maintain your current level, that's probably still good enough. On the other hand, I think that there was the sentiment recently online that is like there's so many things on the internet that are like roughly correct, but maybe omit some crucial details, or maybe they misrepresent some details. So it's not actually fully correct, it's just mostly correct. So that doesn't create like a good enough understanding in people, because you know, some blogs, some technical blogs, they tend to simplify, because like, you know, you're trying to strike that balance between who your audience is. Are you explaining everything for people who have zero understanding of what's going on? Are you explaining it for people who have very intimate understanding of what's going on, or like somewhere in between? And you can't write same content for all of these groups, right? Because, you know, you're going to lose, you know, sides of that spectrum. You're like, you're either going to lose people who can't understand what you're talking about because it's too sophisticated, or you're going to lose the other side because it's way too simple. And so I think that people who tend to write professional blogs, you know, if you think about the population, you know, you have that bell curve. So the most readers are going to be in the middle, where they have a little bit of knowledge about it, but not enough. And so that writing tends to naturally shift toward that middle of the road, because it can cover the most audience, especially if your goal is to increase your audience. But then maybe people who are completely new to this aren't getting the full picture of what's happening, or maybe you're not willing to delve deep into very technical topics, again, for that side of the audience that are like more technically inclined. So I think the if you're writing quality, it's a, especially in writing, it's a difficult metric to establish, because again, you know, if you omit details for simplification, somebody say, oh, you're not even talking about X and Y, so this is kind of crap, right? Or if you're going in a very technical side of things, people without that knowledge might say, oh, the writing is impenetrable, I can't comprehend anything, so for me, the quality is kind of low. So I think maybe focusing on quality is not like the right way of looking at it, because you can't really please everybody with that. Somebody will always find something deficient. But instead, it's more of a trying to pick who your target audience is and tailor it for them. Or maybe just write all over the place so everybody has something that they can find interesting. Not pigeonhole yourself into just doing one thing. Because I also think for like a lot of creators, not necessarily for writing, once they start getting a lot of feedback from their audience, they will inevitably start changing their presentation to, you know, fit their audience better.
Mm-hmm.
And on one hand, this is kind of giving people what they want. But on the other hand, it limits your expression, because maybe you're no longer expressing what you want to express, but you're expressing something that your audience wants to hear. And is it like, I don't know if there's anything wrong with that. It's more of like a choice that you're making. Because like there's some people who write without a slightest care about any kind of feedback or whatever other people might think about it. They just do it because they want to write. And then there's people who write for their audience. And, you know, they like their audience and they want their audience to like them back. And, you know, you just got to figure out what your thing is. And do that, but do it diligently, consistently, and with discipline.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe I should think much about quality, the way I'm thinking about it, because you're right, you cannot please everybody, you know. I think also that Maybe I just continue like this. Maybe it's a good idea to just continue the way I'm doing it. Maybe I will learn how to maybe write better,
Yeah.
maybe
Yeah.
or like stuff like that. But because I
Yes.
was thinking about so for example, like I write like just my understanding, really. Like if you ask me something, like what will I say about this particular stuff, that's literally what I write. So I'm not like going into several details or like chains of examples or stuff like that. I just like give, just quick definitions and like quick, just what I know learned from the topic, really. But yeah, I think that's enough. But
Right.
it's
Yeah,
just
yeah.
at some point maybe I will be able to write better, because I can see for myself now. Like I think I've got like what, like five articles in also, and I learned something new in the last
Yeah, yeah.
in the last one, because I felt like how to write more engaging articles. So like I can
Right,
see
yeah.
my writing improving, so that's good. But
Yeah.
about quality,
Yeah.
maybe I should just
Keep
relax a little
doing what you're doing, and we'll put the
bit.
link in the description so all of the 25 subscribers to this channel can be exposed to your writing. And if you're yeah. And if you're
I
watching
mean,
this and you're not subscribed, hit that subscribe button. You see how the platform sort of forces you to change the thing you're doing? It's kind of funny. Like you look at some YouTubers who are really popular, and if they kept their entire catalog untouched, you start watching their very, very early videos, and they do not have a persona in those videos. They're just like an average person. They just like talking
Yeah, true.
about, they're like maybe playing a video game and like narrating, and they're just like having fun and chilling. And then you look at the latest one, and it's going to be, "Hello, YouTube, blah, 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 blah. Please like and
Of
subscribe."
course.
All
Of
of those things,
course.
because the platform forces you, it doesn't force you, but if you don't do it, you don't get the kind of engagement and monetization that you otherwise would. And so it does change how you do your thing. And in fact, you have to create that personality that like is very different from what you are. And it's kind of funny because with passing time, it becomes more and more exaggerated version of itself, up to a point where it kind of becomes comical, but
Yeah, I mean,
hey, whatever works, right? So
yeah,
if again,
facts.
it and that is, I think, in a lot of ways that modulates, or rather that is being modulated by your goal. Because if your goal is to retain your audience and have your subscribers and have your super chats and have your ad revenue, you need to do it, right? Like if, especially if that's your like primary source of income, you get pigeonholed into these things that you can't really get out of. Like, for instance, I remember watching, I mean, I still watch this guy. He's pretty entertaining.
Who's
But
that?
what is the name of his original channel?
Moshe
No. Nothing as
Midani?
but so there's this guy, right? He used to play this game called Escape from Tarkov, which is like a multiplayer shooter. Very sophisticated game, like a lot of technical knowledge that you have to know to play it well. And he was playing it well. And then he released a video saying, "Oh, I have to start a new channel because I want to play other games. But when I play those other games on my main channel, I don't get the kind of engagement because people come to my channel to watch me play Tarkov specifically. So when I post the videos of other games, people don't watch it. My content gets deprioritized, so it doesn't appear as often. I start losing subscribers, I start losing revenue. So as much as I'd like to diversify my content and the kind of games that I play, I cannot because the algorithm effectively punishes me for it." So he started a whole new channel where he plays like Call of Duty DMZ. And it's the same guy, but he has to come up with like this different persona, different style to kind of have these two distinct brands almost. And I think that for a lot of content creators, especially on YouTube, that's like this algorithmic hell that they end up in, where they're so molded by what they've become, they can't break out of that any longer. It's like you think Mr. Beast wants to do those videos all the time? Maybe not. Who knows? But he kind of has to, because otherwise his empire falls apart, potentially.
Yeah. You know, like, about that, yeah, I was actually already started, I started thinking about this already, you know, like, aside like writing in like text stuff, I also want to write like experiences that have like regular experiences, like sleep, food, diet, exercise. I want to just write different things. But then I started thinking about it, like, I cannot just finish talking about Angular and optimization, and then the next thing I talk about is carnivore diet or like whatever, like, you know, like that's two different things. But
it is, yeah.
But
I mean,
anyway.
Okay, like if you have a profile blog that's for Angular only, that would be weird. But if it's just your personal blog and it, you know, if you look at some popular blogs that go back a lot of years back, they have a lot of different topics that they cover. Like you don't have to. And again, who cares? The person who's not interested in carnivore diet, and they should be, is just gonna not read it, or maybe they'll read it and be like, ah, this guy is crazy. Nobody ever does that. And, you know, maybe they'll even comment saying how angry they are about all of the things you wrote. But that drives engagement. So again, who cares?
Yeah. Honestly, you know? Initially, I don't want to leave comments on the blog. Mm. But I guess it's a thing that helps. So yeah, we'll see.
I don't know. YouTube comments is like its own version of hell. At some point in time, I had an ad block setting that would actually remove the comment section off YouTube page entirely.
But it's good.
YouTube comments?
I think so. It helps with engagement.
There's nothing. Well, I mean, it helps with engagement, but it doesn't mean there's anything good in the actual comments. Like the content of the actual comments, 99% of the time is trash. So, unlike the very thoughtful and excellent comments that people leave under my videos, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I was actually gonna compile a whole bunch of information about the carnivore diet. I even like bought a domain for it at some point in time, but then I realized that like it requires a lot of dedication and a lot of effort, because I wanted to kind of have like cross references and like links out to like various podcasts, and it requires a lot of effort. So for now, I kind of like tabled that idea. Mm-hmm. Because for instance, you know, a lot of times I would watch some podcast from some conference, like a medical conference or like a nutrition conference, something like Ancestral Health Foundation videos or something online, and there's going to be a presenter talking about some topic in this space, and he would be saying things that like corroborate some ideas that I had. I'm like, oh yeah, like I could link out to that on that article about that particular topic, right? But it just requires a lot of time investment, which I just sadly don't have right now. And I don't know, maybe I do, but then I wouldn't have any life whatsoever left.
I mean, yeah.
So
yeah, that's true. Like recently I had a one-on-one with someone at work, and we were talking about work-life balance. And yeah, I find like apparently everybody will have to find a way to get that balance for themselves.
Yeah,
but I don't know, do you think it's a myth? Do you think there is actually work-life balance if you work in this industry? Like I was talking also with my friend one time, and we talked about people in other industry. I don't know enough about other industries, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I know about this industry. Like here, if you really want to get to the, if you have a level like that you, or like a particular standard that you want to build for yourself in the industry, I don't really think closing your laptop immediately after work, every day, I don't know how soon you will be able to get to that. It depends on what you do at work though.
Right.
But I feel like you still have to put in extra time, like somehow,
right.
Like maybe during the week or maybe on the weekends. But mm-hmm. I feel like for you to make the difference, like to really get up the ladder.
Right.
I think it will require some. So I'm wondering like, How do you explain to someone that you're done with work, but you're still kind of working? You know, so like.
Right. Yeah. I think we did cover on this some time ago, on this whole idea. And recently, I started watching this channel called The Primogen. The guy is pretty hilarious. He like runs a Twitch stream, but he like clips a bunch of stuff on YouTube, and he had a conversation about like people who spend inordinate amount of times doing code just because they feel like it. And you know, for now, we ultimately live in a market economy, and people who spend more time acquiring skills are gonna be or are gonna end up in a better position than people who choose not to spend extra time to acquire skills. So ultimately, it's all about where your direction in life is, or like rather where you're trying to go with this and what your goals are. And I think it also depends on like the stages of your career, your personality. You know, there's people who just have fun working 80-hour weeks, you know, and like who are we to say no? Arguably, look at them, it's like they have no work-life balance, but it's like from your perspective they don't, but from their perspective, you know, maybe they do. I think work-life balance is meaningful in a situation where a lack thereof actually is causing you some sort of grief or suffering. And that one, it's like, you know, by the time you notice that it became a problem, you know, now you have a problem on your hands, and now you have to figure out work-life balance. So it's a very expansive kind of subject. And you know, everybody has different priorities in life, and sometimes you need to prioritize things that require you to work a lot of hours. And you know, yeah, you have to make adjustments. And sometimes you don't have the luxury of not working that much, right? Not everybody is as lucky to be in IT, where we're fairly well compensated for most part, even though this is Canada and it's like nothing like United States.
I know.
Yeah,
I
right?
know.
Am I right? But then if you think about it, like people in India, they work a lot in IT as well, but they're probably not getting compensated nearly as much as people in Canada are. But is that fair or not? I think it probably is. You know, cost of living here is completely different and all these other things. And, you know, whatever the market will bear, so to speak. But
Yeah.
back to like the work-life balance, I think you have to figure out your level of comfort that also allows you to reach your goals. And you have to you have to understand the direction in which you're going and where you want to end up. Because if you focus on comfort too much, you might not achieve everything you want to achieve. But you know, you'll be comfortable. But the problem with that is you're trading the short-term comfort right now, especially if you like if you're in the beginning of your career, if you're just starting, it's probably the best investment of your time to be on the grind.
I agree. Yeah, if
Like
anyone,
that's the
yeah.
time to acquire all of the skills and all of the networking and you know, also people in the very beginning of their career. I think right now a lot of people they sort of like requalify from other fields into IT, so they might not be as young. But usually if you just graduated university, go work your ass off. I know you're not getting paid as much and the hours suck and the tasks probably suck and you're doing boring work. But yeah, I would come back from school and get on my computer and just do stuff. And that happened for a really long time. And being like a borderline antisocial nerd that I was, you know, it's like it fit my personality really well. I didn't have a problem spending, you know, every waking hour behind my computer. And I think we did talk about it before as well. So,
Honestly, like
yeah.
I think yeah, you're right. Like if you're just starting out, I think even if you're not just starting out, like even but especially if you're just starting out, because There will be a lot of things to learn, but in
Right.
this industry, there is always something to learn, no matter what your level is. Like,
Yeah.
no
It
matter
never
what your level,
stops.
it never
Our
stops.
work is never over. But I think it I feel that it would be probably not great if it comes at the detriment of like your family or your romantic relationships or your children if you have children. Like, nobody's gonna remember the fact that you like worked your ass off and delivered some feature and missed out on your kid's school recital or something. Like, they'll remember that you didn't go to the recital, but the feature that got delivered, who gives a shit?
Exactly.
Right?
It can even
So,
drop the next week.
Yeah,
Maybe it's not even gonna
exactly.
be used.
Yeah, we talked about that too, right? But the thing is yeah, I think it's very easy to justify neglecting other sides of your life because you're very hard at work. It's a good it's like a solid, reasonable justification. Oh, you know, I'm working really hard, I'm providing for my family, therefore I am to be excused for all of the lapses of maintaining my family life, right? So I don't think it's a good idea to fall into that particular trap, because you can feel self-righteous and feel good about it. It's like, oh, how dare you tell me I work too much? This is all for your benefit. But that comes in different forms. You know, having your family members resent you for it is definitely not good, even though you may be bringing home lots of money. If everyone's just hating everything, you know, I was listening to this other podcast yesterday, and they brought up the topic of, you know, there you can see a lot of people who are like really, really well off. They really like pulled a really great starting hand when they were getting their cards dealt. They're like rich, successful, but they're very resentful and they're very bitter, and their life kind of sucks even though they have everything. And then you see the people who are grateful, positive, and happy, even though they don't really have that much. So it can't be just, you know, financial considerations if everybody's miserable as the end result. So don't fall into that particular trap.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess what I understand from what you said is like, you need to find the balance, which I agree with.
Which is like, work-life balance.
But that's work-life balance. But the thing is, like, most people, you see, one time I was reading this book. I can't remember now. There's a book somewhere I was reading. I remember that the guy was talking about dividing your days into three parts. There's 3 8-hours. So there's 8 hours for work, 8 hours for leisure, and 8 hours for sleep, literally.
Right.
And that to me was just interesting, because like after reading that part of, I don't think I finished the book because after reading that, because I was very feeling like that's very.
Hey, maybe he's a very successful author with many copies sold, so he's financially secure and he can afford to dedicate 8 hours for leisure and 8 hours for sleep every day. So, you know, you can't judge him.
To me, that felt like everything was very equal in your life, because if you can, because I don't know, like.
He probably sets up a little metronome and then he eats their food. It's like, chew, chew, chew.
Everything was, I don't know. I think I lost interest after that. I don't even remember the title now. Anyway, the point I wanted to make was like, to me, when people preach work-life balance, they talk about all these things like, oh, go on vacations, like, oh, like, go to 8 hours sleep, you must close your work at 5 p.m. and then connect. But I think, like, at some point, we have to understand what our responsibilities really are and prioritize them adequately.
I think other people can tell you what you must or mustn't do.
Yeah, but that's
the overall idea, that's what they do, but it doesn't mean you have to listen to them, right? Just because somebody wrote a self-help book doesn't mean it's actually going to be beneficial for your particular situation,
I agree,
right?
I agree,
and yeah. I think you in order to have work-life balance, you have to have a very clear idea of what your goals are for your work and what your goals are for your life, prioritizing mm-hmm. them, and then figuring out how to achieve both parallel tracks. And sometimes yeah. they could be completely orthogonal to one another. Like, you know, it's like, you know, if you ever play those RPG games and you have that one choice that, like, you can either choose A or B, but, like, you can do both. And you, like, they're like, ah, I wish, is there a way yeah. that I can, I don't have to make, because, you know, it's kind of funny. Like, in video games, it's like, well, I mean, I can probably play the game again in its entirety and make a choice differently to see that content that I missed mm-hmm. out if I make this choice, but it's very tedious and very annoying. Yeah. So it, those types of decisions always bug me in video games, because it's like, hey, I'm yeah. paying you for the content, but you're making it so that I'm only seeing a portion of it and I have to, like, double my time investment in order to see the other half. So that's not nice. But in life, sadly, that doesn't work at all. Like, if you want to watch your kids grow up, or do you want to work 14 hours a day in the office? Like, maybe you can do a little bit of both, but then you only progress to a certain degree on both, right? So you have to yeah. make that choice. And circumstances in life change, you know. Well, hey, interest rates went up again for the nth time in the last couple of months, so I have to prioritize more work. Well, okay, that's unfair, because I work on a fixed salary, so doing more work doesn't qualitatively change that. But you get the idea. Like, if I was, like, yeah. self-employed, I would mm-hmm. be like, well, maybe instead of working 40 hours this week, I'll have to work 50 just to compensate for overall economic situation right now. And, you know, that happens. You can't sacrifice everything on the altar of work-life balance, but you have to be reasonable about it.
Yeah, one time I had the conversation with one of my friends, and we were talking. I was ranting about how much I have to do, like, mm-hmm. and how, you know, and then she mentioned, like, oh, why you, this is like a few years ago, like, literally, like, mm-hmm. and then she was like, why are you complaining about how much you have to do right now, you know, because later, if you have more, when more gets to be on your plate, what would you do at that time, you know? And that statement, she just said it in passing, right? Like, mm-hmm. but that statement actually got to me, because then I started thinking about it. Like, I'm complaining, like, what would people like Sam Altman do, you know? Mm-hmm. Or like Elon Musk, or like people who actually have several people depending on them. Mm-hmm. Millions of people, or like a lot of people depending on them, and they have more responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how they would define work-life balance.
Yeah, yeah. You know, ultimately, bitching about having too much work to do is a luxury that is only afforded to us by all of the people who, you know, do all of the work to make all of it possible. Like, only in 2023, with this amazing infrastructure around us, built mm-hmm. on, you know, backbreaking labor of hundreds and thousands of people, we can afford to sit on our asses and say, oh, boo-hoo, I think I have too much work and I'd rather not. Like, if imagine 200 years ago or 300 years ago, where you're like subsistence farming, and if you don't produce enough crops, you literally die from hunger. Like, try explaining to those people the whole concept of work-life balance, and they'll look at you like you have a second head growing out of the side of your first head. Like, it's just not a thing, right? It's not a thing at all. Yeah. So even having the luxury of, like, complaining about it shows how far we have progressed as a society, and people take it for granted, and there's not that much gratitude, and, you know. The podcast that I was watching yesterday, there was like a big chunk on the whole, like, gratitude versus resentment thing. So you have to be grateful about the things you have. So yeah, if you exactly. have a lot of work to do that can propel you further and higher in your life and make you a better person, you mm-hmm. should be grateful that you have that grateful. Opportunity. Yeah.
Honestly, that's my mindset. Exactly. That's how I feel about things. I never complain about how much I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't because I'm actually happy. Like the thing is, like when I'm meeting someone now, I think it's one of the first things I put on the table. Like I do try to do a lot of things, and I actually do a lot of things. It's just to maybe like if it happens that I'm not as available as you would want, you have to put all those things up front. So, but I'm happy for the things I have to do and how everything. So yeah, I'm grateful. And I think that helps me to feel better and to release the so-called stress because I never really get that stress. But I mean, it could happen. I'm human, so, but it really helps. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, like work-life balance is it's subjective. Can we agree on that?
100%.
Okay, good.
Yeah, for sure.
It's
For sure.
subjective.
It's nice to have if you can do it, and in the situations where you can't do it, you work hard now. Well, yeah, there's this sort of, there's this idea of if I work super hard for my entire life, will I be in the condition to enjoy the fruits of my labor when I'm like old and sick and everything? And which is certainly true, right? You could be, burying yourself at work, and by the time you're ready to enjoy the fruits of your labor, you're no longer like fully capable of doing that.
Yeah,
So
that's
you
true.
kind of have to balance it out, like actually do enjoy the fruits of your labor while you get the more out of it than later. Because if
Yeah.
for like you can go to YouTube and you can look for these videos where they talk to old people and they ask like about their like biggest regrets in their lives. It's very illuminating. No,
Yeah,
I
but
guess nobody, very few people say they wish they spend more time at work.
you know what?
A lot of people talk about willing to have more experiences in their lives and like saying yes to more things.
You know what?
Yeah.
I read there's this part of the Bible. I read the Bible. So there's this part of the Bible, I think that was Solomon. And when he was about to die, he said, he was talking about how everything is vanity, all is vanity, stuff like that. But you know, this is how I feel. And I'm glad that we're having this type of conversation because I want someone else to listen to my thought. So I agree that when you talk to old people, most of the time they tell you like, oh, what are your biggest regrets? Enjoy or like spend time with family. I get it. But you see, there are stages in life where things start to make sense to you. When I was much younger than this, there were some things that I did not, that I hear other people say, but I couldn't really understand it really. No. But it's so like I feel like different stages in life, we say different things and we understand different things as we grow older.
Yeah, of course.
I feel like if someone who is 90 years old is talking to me about not doing, like, about taking more time to like relax, taking more time to enjoy. I mean, it's good advice. It's not bad advice. It's just that you're 90, you lived your life, you did everything that you could have done or that you
Well,
should have
that's I
done.
guess what I'm saying is that the biggest regret is that they haven't done everything they could have done. Like that's the
Or
biggest
that,
regret too, right?
or that, or that,
It's
like
like
you.
either not spending enough time with their loved ones or not, achieving their full potential, not doing everything they could have done, not
Yeah,
saying
one of
yes
those
to enough
choices.
people. Yeah.
One of those things, But you have lived your life till 90. I don't. If you t tell me that if you give me an advice, like at 90, like, oh, all is vanity, just, I don't know how to take it because
So
I'm looking at you
easy for
like,
you to say, right?
exactly, I'm looking at you like you can afford to sit here and play chess 10 hours and just live your life because you have lived your life. And like the distance between me and 90 years old now is a lot. Like, maybe when I'm like 80, these things will start to make sense. But I don't know if I want to wait for when I'm 80 before it actually start making sense.
That's fair.
You know?
That's fair. So, but I think you also probably want to set up your life so by the time you do hit 80, you did the things that you wanted to do, right? So you don't feel like you're missing out. I don't know. It's getting very esoteric again because I'm fairly far away from being 90 years old. So I still have a bunch of things that I want to do with my life. And I think also if you're just graduating and you're like in your early 20s, I had zero clue about what I wanted to do with my life at that age. And anybody who pretends that they know what they want to do to like in their life at that age, they're full of it. Like, honestly, I do not believe for a second that somebody can have that grand plan for their life at 20 years old, especially now, especially now, again, in that very rarefied air of, you know, access to infinite source of information and like all of the pleasures of the world.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can be as hedonistic as possible for as long as possible, you're going to come out and say, I am 19 years old and I know exactly how I want my life to unfold. Yeah, right. So, yeah, you're correct. As your life progresses, as you accumulate different experiences, you get better at prioritizing what really matters, right? And again, it's purely subjective because the things that really matter to one person could be completely different to another. I think there probably are some human universals, you know, like children, family, like as much as we try to pretend like that's not the case, like that delusion doesn't really work out. You know, you still, you know, in order to be considered human, you kind of have to partake in those things, I feel.
Yeah.
So calls to hedonism and things like that, I don't think that they're going to work out in the long term, but that's besides the point. But where was I going with this? I had some idea in my head. Yeah, like accumulating different experiences in your life. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing too is, you have to actually go out and accumulate those experiences. You have to actually go out and do stuff and go places and read things and listen to music and like watch different things. Like, because the more experiences you accumulate, the better your sense of direction in life becomes, in a sense, I think. Because you need a lot of bases of comparison to make value judgments about things, and if you're not able to make value judgments about things in your life, you cannot achieve your goals. So
also set better goals.
3D 5 me.
you're also able to set better goals.
Yeah, that's true. You can also set better goals. Yeah. And you know, achievable goals is a big thing too. You have to be able, like, people are not really, I was watching this podcast about this interesting form of schooling where it's like completely, it's for small kids. And they said this phrase that's like, for like a third grader, the maximum span that they can reliably plan for is like the end of the day and maybe tomorrow.
What else would you plan for?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like,
if you plan for the end of the day, you're really good.
The older you get and the more experiences you acquire, the better you get at planning things and setting realistic and achievable goals for yourself. So, but yeah, if you are a recluse and never experience anything, well, I mean, that's kind of sad life on one hand, but also that messes up with your internal navigation software in terms of not like walking around in the street, but like navigating through the obstacles of your life.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, so yeah, like these things get to me because I'm afraid to think of myself like, am I supposed to understand this differently? Because I know Solomon is supposed to be the wisest one in the Bible, was really blessed with a lot of wisdom. And if he says that, I want to believe it, you know, because, you know, I believe these things. But then it makes me afraid, like, I mean, am I doing the wrong thing? Because sometimes I feel like, maybe I don't do good to anyway, it's okay. But
I think it's a universal that anything you do, you can probably do better.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of harkening back to the whole thing about producing crappy content at the start. It's like anything you do, you can do better, but that shouldn't prevent you from not doing it, right? Because you're not achieving the best possible result doesn't mean you have to give up and like not try. So
I guess we keep doing it. You keep you're right, we keep at it and then we keep putting in our best, like everything will make sense, I believe, because I was just feeling like, you know, it'd be nice to have some little, like you said, family time. It's really important, right?
Mm-hmm.
And also socializing, it's also good. So
yeah,
thank you, Vasily.
Touch grass.
Touch grass, yeah.
Go touch grass. Screen.
Yeah, so getting on the screen.
I started doing this thing when in the morning, like I make myself a cup of coffee and then I go into backyard, take my shoes off and just walk on the grass bare feet. It feels kind of nice.
It must be nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's actually some form of therapy there.
Yeah, yeah. It's very calming. Well, I mean, it only kind of works in the summer, especially with Vancouver weather. But I'll take it while we're having a nice it's weather good. Out here.
What I started doing is taking random walks. So now I walk like twice. So maybe during lunch.
Mm.
Maybe it's good. But that's... I think so. It helps me. It helps me to calm down and then just get out of the screen.
Yeah.
I feel like it helps with like reflection too. I don't know. Walking, grass, spending time in nature. I think it's good for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think disconnecting from technology is definitely a necessity that most people are not willing to go that far. Like, I mean, I'm on my phone all the time. I shouldn't be on my phone all the time. Like, I actually should just not have it with me and go on a walk and not listen to stuff. As much as I enjoy acquiring new knowledge through listening to various podcasts or whatever, it is entertaining and I learn a whole bunch of stuff. Sometimes there is definitely the need to just stay one-on-one with your thoughts and like think things through.
Yeah, that's good. It's important, I believe.
Because I think the other thing too is you start thinking about some of the things in your life and those thoughts can be quite unpleasant, right? Maybe like you're not achieving the goals that you've set out for yourself or something like that. And so you, again, remember how we talked about how your brain would like trick you into doing pleasant things versus unpleasant things.
Did talk about that.
Yeah. So that's again same thing. It's like, why would I think unpleasant things about the direction of my life where I can just plug in some podcast and just like do. But it needs to be pondered. You need to think about it. You need to consider it. And if you don't, eventually you fall off a cliff because something in your head is telling you like you have to adjust your direction in life and you're like, nah, mm-hmm. it'll be fine. And you mm-hmm. just keep on going in the same direction you were going. And then mm-hmm. when you fall off a cliff, it's like, well, hey, we told you, you chose not to listen.
Yeah.
So it is something that I have to figure out a way how to do. But again, you know, it's really difficult to break bad habits in your life. And you know, a lot of things in our life today is designed to be addictive. And it's just hard to resist so many different things. Like, you know, technology, the phone, the food, entertainment, you know, it feels like you will be so, if you disconnect from all of those things, you're just going to be so alien to most people. You know,
yeah,
it's like what are you going to talk to them about? Like, if you're not clued in to the latest thing that's happening on Kardashians or whatever, like, what is even there to talk about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. But you know, about the running mind thing, I found a book.
Mm.
I mean, Yeah, if we do a plug, a book plug, we better get endorsement. Anyway, I found this book inside Focus. I forgot the name of the author, but it's blue covered. Focus.
I haven't read it.
It talks a lot about these issues with like maintaining focus, and anxiety is one of it. And yeah, the book really helped me to learn more about these things. So I think sometimes it isn't from the book that I learned that sometimes when you actually have this feeling, you can listen to the feeling and actually understand, because if you do, you will be able to understand why you're feeling this way, and you will be able to actually focus on the reason why you feel this way. Because most times, when this feeling comes, it's uncomfortable. We just want it to go away. So like find ways to shut it down, and it keeps coming back. It's just, yeah. I also learned from that, like usually, anxiety is like in like the olden generations of humans, it's from the fight of
Fight or flight? Fight or
fight or
flight?
flight, response. So there is something going on, and you have to pay attention to what's going on. So yeah, I feel if this is what I would suggest, like being able to actually pay attention to the things going on. So for example, if it's about a goal, maybe you can pay attention to what to do better in terms of, I don't know. It's, I think the book would do more explanation and better explanation of what I'm thinking about than
Yeah,
what
fair
I'm
enough.
saying.
I think there was this interesting idea that it's like, yeah, we have the fight or flight response, but again, because you know how if you do like sensory deprivation exercises where you like deprive your brain from sensory inputs like noise or anything, right? It effectively it like starts hallucinating things because
Yeah,
it's
creating things.
accustomed to a certain level of signal. So where that signal drops below a certain level, the brain basically goes like, well, there has to be something there and tries to fill it up with things. And I actually start hallucinating things that aren't happening with you because like
Yeah.
that void needs to be occupied by something.
True.
And I think it may be similar with anxiety because of how safe our life is these days. You don't have too many too many signals for actual danger that you have to be alert and, you know, vigilant. And maybe your brain is just filling it up with some signal in absence of everything. And people get anxious because it's like, well, something should be hiding behind the bushes, goddammit. That's how I've evolved. So I better generate some signal making you freak out about things. And on a
True.
different aside, I used to have anxiety problems a bunch of years back. And, you know, they're not fun.
No.
They're not fun at all.
No, not at all.
But I mean, some things changed in my life. I cannot attribute it directly just to that thing. But, you know, when I went carnivore, I had basically zero problems with anxiety these days. I used to be able to have certain thoughts that I would detect the beginning of that thought in my head, and I knew that if I allow this thing to blossom fully, I'll end up in some sort of anxious state, bordering panic attack type deal, and I would have to deliberately like jam it out of my brain. So I had like the second thread running, monitoring my thoughts, detecting that stuff just to kind of put a damper on it. And I gotten pretty good at it too. I would like detect it was like early warning system. I would detect it early and be like, no, you don't get out of here.
No.
Now I don't remember last time that happened.
That
So
honestly,
it's not it's a non-issue for me.
I think it's true, because I've heard like a lot of testimonies about this, and I've also seen it myself. Like the type of things that you eat can be responsible for these certain types of like conditions or like feelings.
True.
So, but I'm not a doctor and I don't know much about nutrition either, but I know like since I started also like the carnivore thing and watching how I eat, I've seen like certain things become better, like,
No,
and yeah, I'm
it's a
just convinced
it's a
actually.
contentious topic these days. We should probably do a whole thing just on that,
I'll be
but I'm
ready for
afraid that I'll be raving like mad saying how great it is and
that.
people will freak out.
Yeah,
But, you
next
know,
week. Next week.
results do speak for themselves. And I mean, I have figures to prove it. And I mean, I have a lot of subjective things too, but I also definitely have the actual figures to prove it. So it would be interesting to talk about this sort of focus on that subject. So maybe next week we'll do that.
Maybe next week. Maybe next week. We'll see. Yeah, but yeah, it's really good talking to you today, Wesley. Thank you again for your time and taking all this time to actually like listen and give your advice. It's really nice. Thank you very much,
Oh,
Wesley.
you're very welcome. It was a very good conversation. I had a
Yeah,
blast.
I enjoyed it
So,
too.
yeah,
Thank you.
next week we'll do it again.
All right, see you.
All right, see you. Thanks everyone for joining us. Have a great day.
Goodbye.